So in this beautiful text called Gyan Sar, a vision of or the essence of knowledge, the essential knowledge that we all need, we have done three verses. In the first verse, the person is like us. He or she is trying to acquire more joy, more pleasure, more possessions, gets attached, gets bound, suffers when he loses and gains. The first verse is an invocation. The second verse is talking about bondage. In the third verse, he realizes that having chased after all these worldly objects, I may have acquired them, but I have not got that true bliss, that permanent joy. Yes, temporarily I had some pleasure, I had some fun. Maybe I was even successful in the world and people recognized me, but that inner peace, that inner joy, I have not experienced. And so as we can see in this text, the student is slowly changing. Initially totally attached to the world, then he gets a little disillusioned. And so he says there must be a better way. And so in the fourth verse, we see his evolution from just being a man of the world to becoming a seeker, wanting something higher. So he starts this by obviously remembering the one who is the creator of the world, the Lord himself. So the verse number 4, it's in page 13 in this book. Ishasya daso hamiti prajanan. Yadaso hamiti prajanan te naiva yukto vividheshu karmasu. Vayukto vividheshu karmasu. Devasya kavyam jagade dadatamam. Syakavyam jagade tadatmam. Pashyan sada karma karoti sadhaka. Yan sada karma karoti sadhaka. So sadhaka, he has become a seeker. He has become a seeker of truth. So what does he do? Ishasya daso. Isha means the Lord of the universe. It can be anybody. It can be Jesus, Father in heaven, Allah, Krishna, Buddha, Shiva, doesn't matter. But the one that is the Lord of the whole universe, Ishasya Daso, I am his servant. Aham, Ishasya Daso, iti prajanan. He has clearly understood, he or she obviously, has clearly understood that I am a servant of the Lord. Te naiva yukto vivideshu karmasu. And in all these vivida, all these karmas, all these actions that I am performing, he has assigned me to do it. He has placed me here. He has sent me here. I am his servant. That's it. And what about this beautiful world I am seeing? Devasya kavyam. Kavya means it is a poetry. It is a poetry. It is a painting. It is a beautiful, beautiful, you know, presentation of the Lord. The Lord has created this beautiful world like a poetry, like a painting. All this whole world he sees as the Lord's creation. Pashyan sada, and seeing this, sada karma karoti sadhaka, then he all the time, all his actions are with this particular attitude. What do we mean by a servant? Or say there is a sales representative, you know, salesman who works for a big company. I mean, he's a servant of the company in the sense, you know, he's been employed and so he's been assigned. So when he's sent to a particular company to sell to a particular state to sell a product, he will not say this is my, you know, product or this is my opinion. The company has made it. They give him what things he should say. They have given him the handouts, and that's what he repeats. And he has to believe it. You know, he has to believe in the product to be a successful salesman. He will say, it's okay, you can like it or don't like it, take it. You know, then he's not going to succeed. He has to believe and he has to have faith. At the same time, he cannot have his own will or his own ego. I will only sell, you know, this product. I will not sell this product. No, whatever comes from the headquarters, whatever instruction comes, he follows to a T. Then only he'll become a successful salesman. And then eventually he can be promoted to sales manager or like an ambassador, you know, the United States has sent an ambassador to Iran or Iraq or London or, you know, South Africa or Brazil, that person may be a Democrat or may be a Republican or may not even agree with the policies in Washington that are being practiced. But at this moment, I represent the government of the United States of America, and whatever instructions come from the State Department, I'm going to follow them 100%. If he has to start his own will, then he has to first resign and say, okay, I'm not going to be an ambassador. I'm tired of this. Then he can go ahead and oppose the government. So the first requirement for a servant is that he or she should not have self-will. Does not mean that you become a doormat or become a useless, but the Lord alone has placed me here. Whatever I have, first of all, the body, who gave me this body? Who gave me this mind and intellect, the ability to think? Who nourished me in my mother's womb? And then who takes care of me when I sleep at night? Who multiplies all my red blood cells and white blood cells? I don't do all that. Who makes sure my lungs are breathing and my heart is beating constantly for 80, 90 years? So he constantly remembers the Lord, remembers that he has given me whatever I have, this beautiful earth that has been created. You know, people think it's for my pleasure. No, it's not for my pleasure. It is here for me to serve the Lord through serving the world. I see the world as an expression of the Lord, and I work in the world as an humble instrument. Not as, see, sometimes when you start serving or when you start doing good things and helping the world, or you get a little knowledge or you get a little power, then you feel, I am somebody special. You know, I am doing so much for serving the world. And look at these people. They don't even recognize me. You know, nobody praises me. They don't come and, you know. No, he says, I am a humble instrument of the Lord. I remember my mother, when she started writing, you know, she has written a lot of spiritual books. And when she first started writing, she was a young woman, I mean, in her 30s or so, around 30 when she started writing. And her guru, he just happened, you know, he was sitting at one point in the temple and she walked by and bowed down to him. So he looks at her. He says, oh, so you have started. She had just written some articles for magazines. He said, so you have started writing articles in magazines. She said, yeah, you know, Guruji, whatever little I know. So you think you're going to become a great writer and get well known? So she was startled, you know. She thought, maybe my guru didn't like, you know, my writing. So he said, I'll give you one piece of advice. Be a pen, don't be a writer. Be a pen. That means somebody else is writing through you. You know, you are just... Then every writing becomes divine. And that point she has kept with her all through these years of, because she has over the 50 years or so she has been writing. She has remembered this point, and it, these kind of things, you know, hit you very strongly. So whatever happens, there is a divine purpose behind that. Like say now this building was built and some of us who were involved, we could say, oh, you know, we were responsible for building this and done such a wonderful job, then that would become a source of ego. Even serving, even doing a spiritual work like working in church or helping the poor can become an exercise in ego. You know, I am the, you know, greatest, I'm the one who comes to mass every Sunday and I do so much. The idea of behind this building, say if you think about it, the way to think about it is that the Lord had already decided that this building is going to be built here in this location to serve the children, because the children come and study and others come. And we should be grateful that we were chosen as the instrument to build it. If we had not done it, somebody else would have done it. But his work always goes on. And his work is, he's all powerful. He can do anything. He can find anyone to do it. So if I was chosen, I should be extremely grateful that I had this opportunity to help, had this opportunity. And it can be in any situation, even when you're serving the homeless or the, you know, the poor or doing whatever, that attitude should be there. In this path, You don't need to change your occupation. You say if you're a doctor, you don't need to say, I'm going to give up medicine, put on orange clothes and, you know, go to the forest and become a monk. Or I'm going to put on a white habit and become a priest. This world is, you know, no good. I'm going to give up my family. No. Wherever you are, you don't have to change your profession. You don't have to change your dress. You don't have to change your name. Yeah, if somebody has that strong desire to become a monk or a priest, that's different. But the majority of us are, you know, householders, married and have families and children. So what do? I continue to do the same job, but just change your attitude. Change your attitude. Whatever I am doing, I still continue to be a doctor or an engineer or a housewife or an accountant or a teacher. I still remain a mother and a father and a brother and a sister and a parent, whatever, and a child. But I change my attitude towards the action. That's why they say from karma, you become karma yoga. Karma yoga and karma, what is the difference? Karma means action. So any action that is done is called karma. So like now I'm speaking, that is an action. You are listening, that is an action. The fan rotating is an activity. Activity, even your action of breathing. You know, all of you are breathing at this moment. That also is an action. How does a karma become karma yoga? Yoga comes from the Sanskrit word yuj, which means to unite. So any activity united with the higher, that means either joined with God, dedicated to God, or it could be dedicated to society. I want to serve the city of Bakersfield. I want to plant 1,000 trees. I want to clean the city. I want to serve the poor. Or it could be for my church, or it could be for my community, or for my neighborhood, my neighborhood watch. You know, I try to make my neighborhood clean. So any activity dedicated to a higher cause, it could be for the nation or it could be for the whole world, you know, like the great prophets like Jesus and Buddha and Shankaracharya and Mahatma Gandhi, all these great people, they did not only serve one community or one nation, but their idea was to serve the whole world through their teachings, through their actions. So dedicating my activity to the higher, doing it unselfishly, constantly remembering the God, makes it karma yoga. So every activity I should dedicate to the Lord, then automatically it reduces your ego. Also, then a person doesn't get too happy with success and failure, likes and dislikes. He doesn't have likes and dislikes. Like the salesman, he doesn't have likes and dislikes. He does what the boss tells him from the company. So here also, whether I like a work or don't like a work, if it's God's work, I have to do it. If there is a success in the work, it doesn't go to his head. He says, Lord, thank you for the opportunity to do this job. Thank you for the success. If there is failure, though, then I think we need to rethink. Okay, now this job didn't succeed. Maybe I didn't put in the right effort. Maybe I didn't have the right inspiration. Maybe I didn't have the right tools. So he reevaluates. And even after that, if the person finds I put my best effort and the job didn't succeed, that's okay. That was not meant to be. It's God's wish. So slowly the person goes beyond likes and dislikes, beyond success and failure, and remains Sama. In Gita, they call it Sama, means equanimous, balanced, remains at peace. Because then, when does my mind get stressed? When I have this ego of doership. I did it. I didn't do it. I didn't succeed. But slowly, as I dedicate to the Lord, ego becomes less, the life becomes more peaceful, there is less stress and tension in my life. And what does he see? He sees the world as I mentioned, as a painting created by my Divine Father, the Lord in heaven, who loves me, has created this whole world. That's why in our scriptures, they say the world has 8 aspects, Ashtamurti. 8 aspects, space, air, fire, water, earth. So they are the 5. Space, air, fire, water, earth make the whole gross world as we see it. And then mind, intellect, and ego. Ego is the perceiver, feeler, and thinker. So the objects are the 8, are the 5. Air, space, fire, water, earth. Perceiver, feeler, thinker is the ego. And mind and intellect are the 8. So body and objects are made out of 5. The ego is 6. Mind, intellect are 7 and 8. Right? So 5 elements, mind, intellect, and ego. So these 8 constitute this whole universe. Anything that you see in the world is made up of these. And he says, my Lord is there in these 8 forms. Everything that I see, whether I see a tree, whether I see a little insect crawling, that person has universal love, loves everybody. Why? Because the divine Father who created me has created everything. Even a blade of grass he respects, any animal, even an insect. Then the person has spontaneous love, does not hate anybody, does not look down on anybody because he sees the oneness, that one alone is there in all. And if they are all me, all alone, all are just that one creation, then how can I have excessive love for somebody, excessive hatred, likes and dislikes? His life becomes a spontaneous outpouring of love. Loves everybody. Talking about love reminds me of a little story. This man was reading a newspaper and he would spend hours, you know, reading the newspaper. One of those old-fashioned type who still read the everything, you know, classified. Even though he didn't need a job, he would read everything. So his wife was one day saying, you know, he spent so much time reading the newspaper. She says, how I wish I was that newspaper, so I could be in your arms for so many hours. So that was a nice sentiment. So he says, yeah, I also wish you were a newspaper so I could get a new one every day. His funeral is this Saturday. But anyway, that is not love. I guess for him it was. But anyway, the point is that this person becomes a inspiration to others because he or she then becomes a prophet, becomes a leader, because people look up to him. Look how this person, you know, has no arrogance, no, you know, pride, so much humility, so much love, so much sacrifice. How much this person is doing for others, so that person becomes a source of inspiration, becomes a source of guidance, becomes a leader, becomes a saint, becomes a prophet, becomes a monk. So that is what they say. But most of us, you know, are looking for miracles. We say, I'm going to sit here and some guru will come and put his hand on my head and I'll be realized. You know, or some miracle will happen and we just go to the church and say, oh Lord, let there be a miracle. I want to become, you know, I mean, in this world, nothing happens just by itself. Like a lion, say he wants a deer, to capture a deer. So is he going to just stay with his mouth open and then hope a deer jumps into it? No, he has to go out and chase after a deer. So anything you want to accomplish, you need to put effort. So spirituality also needs its share of effort. You have to decide that this is the important goal in my life. And I have to change. I cannot change the world. The world will not change. The world will remain the same. Republicans will remain Republicans. Democrats will remain Democrats. The government will remain shut down. So those things will remain. But I have to change my attitude. I change the way I look at the world. I change the way I look at myself. The only person I can change is myself. I cannot change my spouse, even though women say they try for 30 years, it doesn't work. I cannot change my children, even though I have, you know, carried them in my womb and, you know, taught them how to walk, talk and everything. You cannot change. You cannot change anybody. You can guide them. You can inspire them, which you have to do for your children. But if you think that you can change somebody, you are mistaken. Only person you can change is yourself. And it is a gradual transformation. It's not a miraculous thing. It's not suddenly lightning strikes and you become. So how do I know? How does God talk to me? You know, is he, I'm going to sit in my meditation and God is going to say, son, get up and do this. No, it's not going to happen. They say through the scriptures and through the guru. Scriptures are God's word that have been sent. You know, whether it's the Bible or the Quran or the Bhagavad Gita or the Guru Granth Sahib or whatever the scriptures are, they are the words of God, and the prophets are the messengers who have brought it, and the monks and the priests and are the ones who interpret it. Because most of these scriptures, A, were written in ancient times, so the language is ancient. And most of the scriptures are written in a very mystical language. It's a very mystical. It's not very clear cut. And so that's why we need a guru. So somebody like in this text, Swami Tejomayananda, who is the head of the mission worldwide, has written this text and has also translated and written a commentary on it. So having a guru and reading the scriptures tells me what is right, what is wrong, what I should do. And also the station I have been placed in at this moment, wherever I am, whatever my situation, there is somebody up above whose hand is working, and wherever I am is the best place for me. It does not mean that I should not progress or try to become better, but realize that I'm fine where I am. And then continue to do effort in this world, but the main focus should be to evolve spiritually. As I am doing my job, if I am a doctor or a housewife or do my duties dedicated to the Lord, do it unselfishly, do it without likes and dislikes, without special love and hatred, then every activity becomes a worship. And such a person then very quickly evolves to the higher. And then come certain questions. You know, who am I? Why am I on this earth? Why has God placed me here? What is this world that has been created by him? So all these questions then arise, and those we'll try to answer next week. So here we end. We do have time. Any questions or comments? Right, I think that's an excellent point, because there are three kinds of charity. One is the sattvic. Sattvic is the high. In the Gita, they talk where you even the right hand doesn't know that what the left hand has done, and the person does it, you know, unselfishly, does it to the right person at the right time. You know, like somebody who is really in need or a good institution who is serving. The person does it without any regard for his name, does it in plenty, you know, and all that. Then the second is called Rajasic, where the person does the charity but does it for name, so that my name may become, you know, so that in the next election we'll say, this person is very charitable, he has done so much, and so I will win the next election. So that can become a Rajasic. And then the third one, the lowest one, is where you do charity to the wrong person at the wrong time, like an alcoholic or a drug addict. You give him $20, you know, to drink or to use drugs, then that is a wrong kind of charity, where you are helping this person. Or you insult somebody and say, you are a useless, you know, piece of this and that, and then you throw some money at him and, you know, insult him, make him feel very low. So that is the third kind. But what Diana is speaking is a very good point. In the second one, where a person does not want his or her name to be there, but if that name appears, then as you said, it may become an inspiration to others. So there, if that person's attitude is pure, it's not that I want to get anything out of this or become famous or become elected, but by yes, you know, people have given donations and it inspires others. So there it would not be a wrong thing to do. So I agree with you, I think. I think there is a fine line, and it all depends on your mental attitude. That's why they say change yourself. Everything, it's not what you do, it is how you do it. Like I said, even cleaning the church or the temple, it could become an attitude, it could become an action of love, or could become an action of ego. You know, that I am the only one who keeps this church clean. So yes, it is the attitude with which you do it. It's how you do it, not what you do. That is important. Yeah, but I agree. I think that's a good point.
Versus, I mean, is it experiential? Is it experiment with change or?
Right. Well, look at your own life. You know, 10 or 20 years from now, in the past, how you were and how you have evolved. You have not changed the world around you. You have changed within. You yourself can see the change. So all growth, spiritual growth, only happens within. So that and the change has to be done by oneself. When I meant no self-will, it does not mean that you don't put the effort. What we meant by no self-will is that the ego is not there. The doership is not there.
Yes.
Absolutely. Right. So the change comes from within, and you have to put your own effort. This reminds me of a little joke. Some of you may have heard it. This Buddhist monk goes to a pizza shop and orders pizza. And so the pizza was about $14. So he gives $20, and the man doesn't do anything. So he says, what about my change? So the man says, change comes from within. So he doesn't give him his $6 back. Must have been must have read some philosophy. But anyway, so change has to come from within. Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, and it, like I said, there's no miracle. There's nothing and miraculous. It is a gradual process of evolution, just as we were first an amoeba, then we evolved to a fish, and you know, so on and on. We became human. So from human, you have to become superhuman. And that is this level of sainthood. So that is where we have to evolve. Yes. There are many things. First of all, yeah, do the scriptures support it, what I'm doing? And then if the guru, if you're close to a guru or a teacher, and it doesn't have to be Indian, it could be, you know, a priest in the church or whoever, who knows you and is, you know, is interested in helping, then that person would know. But more than that, within me, am I becoming more calmer? Am I becoming a more peaceful person? Am I becoming calmer? Things that used to bother me don't bother me anymore. People that used to irritate me, now I say, oh, may the Lord be with you. So how I deal with the world, and that is how you know that you are getting better, you know, that you are evolving. Because I can tell, you know, that is my mind now more happier? Am I more at peace? Am I more at content? Contentment is also a very important virtue. In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 12th chapter, the word contentment comes so many times. That you have to be content. It does not again mean that you don't progress, but at the end of the day, oh Lord, thank you for what you have given. I am contentment. So am I more contented? Am I happier? That will tell that you are progressing.
But starting somewhere
with maybe scripture and teaching, right. And then see the Lord in your children. See, when you sit with them and when you're teaching them or when you're talking to them, they say, the Lord has come to my house. Little baby Jesus has come, or, you know, Krishna or whoever. And so seeing the Lord, then you develop, you know, then you're, even when you're cleaning the diaper, then even that becomes an act of worship. It's not something that's, you know, unpleasant or unhappy. Why do I have to do it? Or if the child is misbehaving, even then you develop love for that child, and then you, if you are calmer, then no matter how difficult the child is, if you are calm, then it becomes much easier to to deal with that child, then if you are yourself, you know, agitated, then you kind of transfer your agitation to the child. So I think the people who, if the children are very much disturbed, a lot of times it is because the parents are not, you know, calm and not, I think that has a role in it, definitely.